podcast. This is episode 117. I'm Phil Brining. I was joined this week by Vicky Lawson and Tracy Pez. How do you think the session went, guys?
Yeah, really good. I think there's some good conversations around ropers. Lots of things covered.
Yeah, it was funny to get a kick up the jacks, wasn't it? Come on, you lot, get on with it. Stop chatting about the news. We didn't really cover the news, did we, in the end?
No, we didn't.
A big discussion. And there's some really good contribution from quite a few people, though, weren't there? Three or four people actually unmuted and had quite a lengthy dialogue with us, which was great, you know, expressing their views and putting their thoughts forward. I mean, that's what this is all about, isn't it? Building out the community.
Yeah, definitely. And the chat was going crazy.
Yeah, the bit that was a little bit not good. When I have to say I need to reread that data protection reform bill, because when I read it this morning, you know, the section 15, there must be a revision that I've not seen or didn't look at this morning. But so that wasn't very good from my point of view. But what was your highlight? What were your highlights of the session?
I thought it was really good, as you say, people chipping in. But we got people from all sorts of different sectors giving feedback from their own filling in the roper. So it was really interesting just hearing other people's opinions.
Yeah, I think that's always good, isn't it, getting different sectors. Mm. Yeah, and then it makes you appreciate, really, you know, you get some of the local authorities, you know, massive diverse organisations. When we're talking ropers, you know, we're trying to say simplify it, dumb it down, and they're saying, hang on a minute, I've got 200 different service areas to manage, and how we're meant to kind of keep hold of those. So that's always interesting to get those points of view, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and there was some talk about what system to use, you know, Word documents, Excel documents, database systems, people throwing out different database systems that they're using. I mean, a few years ago, there weren't any database systems for this, and now there just seems to be an explosion of this kind of privacy tech sector. Always good to see what people are doing. Anything else to Tracy or Vicky that you thought, you know, was worth highlighting in this session, why people should be listening to this?
Like Vicky said, it was just really interesting to have different inputs from different size organisations, different sectors, and just, yeah, get different people's views on the importance and the challenges that they have.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. And I still haven't managed to get onto ChatGPT. I started the session off saying I wanted to get onto ChatGPT and ask it to produce a record of processing activity for employee processing. Not managed to get logged onto it yet, but I still intend to do that as soon as I can, or I shall ask Mark to do it, who's already got an account. Because I think it'd be interesting to see what came out of that. And Jason was saying about, you know, he's got colleagues that are starting to use AI, and you know, keeping that update on the ropery again is something that is important to do. So yeah, it was a good session. So thank you very much, Tracy and Vicky, for joining me on it. Next week is GDPR Radio, but without further ado, you know, we'll let you dive into this week's session on ropers. So Tracy, Vicky, hi. When were you last on a WebEx, a podcast?
So we were on the one on International Women's Week a few weeks ago. It was just the GDPR Radio, but yeah, we were on it together with Jasmine, which was good.
Right. Okay. Good. Good. And what about you, Tracy? You on set anything since then or not? Is that your last one?
No. That was my second and last one that I did.
Second and last one. Sounds a bit final. Now I know you're under the bit under the weather today, and also packing your suitcase. So we'll try and make it fairly easy for you. Hopefully, maybe not.
Thank you.
are you all right on the door, Joe? Now taking over the door.
Yeah, that's fine, Phil. Yeah,
good stuff. So what have you been up to this week, Vicky, Tracy? I know we had 2 days away on a off-site consulting away day. Well, more of a workshop, wasn't it? Sort of planning and plotting and getting ready for next year. What else have you been up to this week?
Not a lot, really. Just trying to catch up after having 2 days out.
Yeah, it's not easy, is it, once you take a bit of time out? What have you been up to, Tracy?
Client visit again on Wednesday, so I've been out for 3 days. And yeah, just trying to catch up and prepare for going away. So yeah, it's been quite hectic.
And you're going away a week on Saturday, is it?
No, I go away on Monday.
Oh, you're joking.
Terrible. Nope.
Terrible. Last day. Yeah, no, I've been really busy because I was last week, but most of last week I was in, where was I? Ireland, doing some PCIDSS assessments for a big retailer. So I feel like I've been out of the office for about a week and a half because I have, and therefore it's a huge backlog of stuff to get on with. And since coming back, it's been running around and I've been looking at some interesting cases actually this week with support. But other than that, it's just been trying to catch up with things. I was also working with Gary on developing out some more training courses. Again, that's coming along really nicely, our masterclass series. So quite looking forward to seeing the fruits of all that labour. Anything you've seen in the news? Anything of merit to raise? I was trying to get on ChatGPT earlier, which I haven't been able to get on with. I know everyone's probably been there before me, but I was going to see if I asked it to write me a record of personal activity for employment, what it would do. But I haven't managed to get logged on to it. Anything you've seen in the news?
Well, I spotted that ChatGPT, it's a bit of a mouthful. They had their first data breach. They've notified all of their users of a data breach, which happened during an outage on the 20th of March and exposed payment related and other personal information about ChatGPT Plus subscribers who were active during a specific 9-hour window.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so relatively new company and first breach.
That's not good, is it? Have you used it at all? I haven't managed to get on the news.
No, I haven't. No, but I know others in our office do use it a lot. So haven't formed my own opinion of it yet.
Right. What about you, Tracy? Have you managed to get on to using it?
No, I had a very brief look about 10 minutes ago. The first time, so I've got really no comments on it as yet.
Right. I read quite an interesting article this morning, actually, about drafting contracts with ChatGPT. And, you know, the legal opinion, the opinion in the legal profession seems to be, you know, can be quite a useful tool. But ultimately, if you end up having a poor contract written because you've put in poor information, you know, who's responsible for that? The AI person who's written it, or the organisation, or you for, you know, relying on it. So that was quite interesting.
Yeah, we had, I think Jazz asked it a question before and it said, came back with something and she turned around and said it was wrong. So you do have to have that like expert knowledge behind you already before you use it, we concluded.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, when Miles was trying out something called Jasper, I would have thought 2 years ago, just as a, to see what it did, that was woeful. I mean, it was just so inaccurate. I mean, ChatGPT, the things that Miles has produced just for kind of experimental stuff is actually pretty good. Then end of the wedge, eh?
Yeah, I think we've QA'd a couple of articles that ChatGPT have written, and they've been okay.
Right, that's all worrying. Hang on, turn the lights out on our way out. Yeah, Lisa said she's lost sound. Hopefully, everybody else says that they can still hear us. So hopefully, Lisa's got sound back. Hopefully, we'll see. I read something about deepfake as well. I'm not, you know, I've kind of seen bits of deepfake, but I'm not entirely sure I've got my head around it really. But this was really discussing whether there's any legal redress, you know, for people who've been suffered from deepfake type attacks. And you know, the conclusion of this article was that there isn't anything in the UK law that you have to be cobbling together bits of law to try and find some kind of approach to take with it, such as, you know, reputational damage, defamation law, and use of intellectual property and copyright law. But again, the article does go on to say that the online safety bill might have some sort of modification to allow for prosecution of manipulated, well, it says pornographic content, but it might be that it's other types of content or without consent. But this whole deepfake, have you seen much of deepfake?
I haven't seen it myself, but somebody in the office was talking about something they saw where there was a picture of Boris Johnson getting arrested. And they said it looked like real. So I think the technology is really coming on in that area.
Yeah. Another one for us to watch, isn't it, really? Very good. Anything else you've got, anything you've seen that you want to kind of flag up? There's some kind of consultation. The ICO's got a consultation on the children's code ongoing. So
I spotted this morning, actually. I have to admit, I haven't read into the consultation at all. But I saw that they're asking for, they've produced some guidance for companies where their services are likely to be accessed by children, and they're seeking some reviews and some feedback on it. So I haven't actually read into it, but yeah, I saw that it's there, and I think it's good that they're going further on the children's code and giving guidance around it as well.
Yeah, did you come across that when you were in education, children's code, or was that not really
I knew about it. It was in my periphery, but as a school, it wasn't really focused on us. It was more kind of making sure that our processes were and our suppliers were aware of it, but we didn't have to do anything specifically ourselves for it.
Yeah. So. All right. Okay. We're getting told to get on with it. Right. Okay, Andrew. Message received and understood. We're going to get on with ropers then. So, no problem. So, yes, records of posting activities. What do we want to talk about today? There's quite a few aspects to talk about, aren't there? We'll come back to the news later on then if there's time, shall we? Is that the best approach rather than keeping everybody waiting? Yeah. Fine. So we normally start off with the kind of the overview question, you know, what are they and what's the point of them? And, you know, again, I always come back to my view, and I go back to, you know, in the old data protection directive, there was a requirement to notify posting personal data to the supervisory authorities. That's why we had the ICO's register back in the day. And when it was first launched, it was really complicated. And I haven't got it to hand here, but often when we're doing ropers, we show, and I can dig it out if anyone wants to see it, the old method, the forms you had to fill in. And the ICO had a notification handbook, and it was literally a form, probably I think a 4-page form per processing activity. And then if you wanted to change any processing activity, you had to send in a change of processing activity form. I mean, what a paper exercise. But in one of the exemptions set out in the directive for not requiring people to notify was if they had a data protection officer or somebody internal that was responsible for keeping these records of processing activities. So my view is that, you know, this whole ROPA thing is rooted back in the directive. And if you read the GDPR, which I know everyone has around here, then, you know, in recital 89, they're basically saying that this indiscriminate way of registering data controllers and it didn't work. And I could testify to that as well, because many years ago, like mid-2000s, I used to do a survey of professional sports organisations and how many had registrations with the ICO and how many purposes were registered with each registration. And, you know, for instance, in the Premier League, there was like 4 out of the 20 clubs had a registration. And I remember Chelsea had like 5 registrations and like 30 purposes. Southampton had 1 registration and 3 purposes. But most of the clubs just weren't there. So to me, the whole thing just didn't really seem to work. And the ICO wasn't resourced to chase it through. And I'm only rabbiting on about this because in my opinion, then the old style notification really informs me of the level of detail that a ROPA probably should contain. Again, feel free to dial in and you know, challenge me or whatever. But I mean, they're not, in my opinion, they're not meant to be highly detailed, you know, data item by data item. I mean, they're meant to be fairly high level. You know, the purpose of them goes back, I think, to the directive. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm flying a kite. Maybe I'm kind of a you're taking the wrong tack. But what have you found when you've been working with clients, Tracy and Vicky? I mean, what's the, you know, do people see the point of them? Do they have challenges with compiling them?
I think they, once you explain to them what they are, I think they do see the point of them. I think it's when people don't necessarily understand what they are that they don't. But I agree with you that it should be relatively high level. I mean, I've come across clients before that have had a ROPA that is, you know, hundreds if not thousands of rows long, and they list every tiny thing that they do with data, and that's just completely unmanageable. So that the purpose of a ROPA is also so that it's easy to understand and easy to manage, and, you know, creating those sorts of documents is not workable. And so I come in and rearrange them and group things together into much more high level. And actually, when you do that, the feedback you get is, this is so much better, and we can actually keep on top of this now.
Yeah. So what have you found, Tracy? I mean, you've sort of care background, haven't you? You're in a totally different environment.
Yeah. I mean, I think I found that, well, in the healthcare sector mainly, that, you know, they really did see the purpose of them. Coming here and having a variety of clients, I would say that I've come across a couple that really don't see the use of them. But I have managed to explain and started work on doing rapers with a couple of clients now. And it's, you know, oh, we think the privacy notice is more important. But, you know, the raper really informs the privacy notice and helps make sure that everything that we do is correct. So, you know, it's really key.
Yeah, Andrew, listen, don't worry about it. It is not a problem. We know you well enough. Anybody can come on here and, you know, we it's an open forum. You know, yeah, we might be kind of hosting it, but no offence will be taken, I'm sure, by anybody. It's absolutely not a problem. I agree with Peter as well. You know, the one kind of rule of thumb is, you know, can I pick up? I mean, I take this on board as a, you know, data protection practitioner and an auditor. You know, if I pick up a roper and I can make sense of it and I can go and find posting activities in our organization and I can actually find that record of on the roper on a privacy notice, then they're probably working. If I'm looking at it and I can't make sense of it, you know, they're either too high level or too detailed, then I'm starting to think, well, what's the point? You know, they're not probably at the right level. So Peter's saying, you know, if the regulator came knocking on the door and we'll be able to understand them, then they're probably fine. But again, that's something you don't know until the regulator does come knocking on the door.
Yeah. Having somebody like us, a consultancy firm, come in and read it, that's a good indication. If we can understand it, then that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on, Vicky, in that, to me, they're the absolute hub. I mean, the two starting blocks for any compliance product to me is drafting up the privacy information management system, the PIMS, the IGF, you know, the policies and the procedural framework that you want the organisation to adopt, and the ROPAs. You know, the ROPAs is sometimes quite a long exercise to put together, but the ROPAs, you're right, everything spins off from that, you know, categories of recipients, international transfers, retention information. The only thing that's missing to me, and I'm not sure why it's not on a ROPA or not required to be on a ROPA, is the lawful basis for processing. But if you're listing the purposes of processing, why would you not put on the lawful basis? Most templates we see have got that on, haven't they?
Yeah.
I suppose the only complication is if there's, forget that. If there is no call. Yeah, so the lawful basis of processing, you know, probably should be there. The other thing that foxes me as well is if the register was public, and the ROPAs aren't, and the only people that there's a duty to expose them to is the ICO. You know, why? Why aren't ROPAs a public document in the public domain? Personally, I think they should be. I don't know if anyone wants to agree or throw an alternative plan, but I can't see why they wouldn't be public. There's no sensitive information, there's no private information, there's no commercially sensitive information on. Why would they not be required to make them public? You know, or even on demand to a data subject, but it's not even that, is there?
No.
Did anyone publish their ROPA?
That's a great question.
Do you, Ben?
Do you publish yours? I suppose publishing a summary on your website might, you know, that's, you know, the bits of it will be in privacy information relating to people that the privacy information relates to. But I think they should be made. I think they should be made public. But. But we'll see. I'm sure that won't happen in our lifetime, the government making them public. Another thing I was interested in these is whether, you know, this kind of carve out, this exemption for small organisations, you know, whether it actually works in practice. Oh, we've got a couple of hands up, right? I'm going to stop now and I'm going to ask who have we got? Two people. Andrew, do you want to jump on? And you got your hand up?
Yeah, Phil, thanks very much. I put a note on there about how difficult this is for large local authorities. A county council has one title, but probably has 200, well, we have 200 odd business areas under it.
Yeah.
And in effect, you also almost need a roper for each business area to set out what they do, what the purposes are of an individual service, housing, say, social care, finance, whatever. In relation to publishing, I think adequate privacy notices go a long way to deliver the information a data subject needs to know about what happens with their data. And I think a privacy notice is a better method of explaining to a data subject what we're doing with their data, because you do have to have legal basis in there.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Actually, I think the privacy notice does do the job for individuals. It's nosy people like me, or you know, suppliers, or you know, just generally other people wanting to have a look at them. That would be the only benefit, I suppose, of making them public. But you make a good point. In terms of the county council, nothing to stop you breaking your rules. I'll come back to the next question in a second. But there's nothing to stop you, I suppose, Andrew, from breaking it up into that format, into having, you know, a ROPA per directorate and structuring them in those ways.
I'd say work in progress.
Right. And let me just ask, how do you keep them? It's not an Excel sheet, is it? Or is it in a database system?
Again, it's evolving. There are so many different spin-off issues with regard to ROPAs in a big organisation, because if you're in an IG department, you don't necessarily know the minutiae of what every department is doing. So you need information owners who know what they're doing to inform the ROPA, to inform the full document. And that's why it's very complicated and very difficult for a large organisation.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to put them together?
Oh, since about 2018, we're still going.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
It's like a DPIA. It's an ongoing piece of work, isn't it? You'll never have one that's up to date.
Fourth row bridge type of thing.
Yeah.
Janice, you've got your hand up. Sorry, I've been ignoring you, but you'd like to jump on?
Hi, I'm Janice. I'm from NHS Foundation Trust. I think what you're talking about here is the normal thing that we actually submit to the Information Commissioner's Office, our notifications and stuff. The NHS, we're slightly sort of bound by our Data Security and Protection Toolkit. So what we've actually had for record of processing activity up to now has been, you've got information flow maps where you're going around your departments going, right, what information have you got coming in? What have you got going out? What have you got sending all around the organisation? In addition to that, you've actually got an asset register held by our IT department. And the latest thing that the DOH in its infinite wisdom has decided is to actually make us actually merge the two together. So that's actually been a bit of a headache for us. Fortunately, I've got previous doing database administration, so my plan is to get access, lump in my two Excel spreadsheets to it, having key indexed them beforehand and hopefully joining them and doing reporting on it. So for us, it is an absolute nightmare.
That sounds quite a challenge. I mean, it's quite a technical challenge as well. Verifying everything's merged properly will be, again, very time consuming, won't it?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's a case of I'll have my asset register key index on that, go through my over one, I can't remember how many flows I've got now. It must be exceeding about 1,100, 1,200. So it's actually going through, looking to see what systems that they hook into, and just actually putting the key indexes through one-to-many association with all the systems that they use. DPIA is actually form part of this as well. And being in the NHS, our DPIAs tend to have to be updated because everybody wants the newest, shiniest thing. So we thought we've actually got it landed and yay, it's good, and we'll just have a look at it in a couple of years' time. But we find that 2 months down the road, oh yeah, we want to bring this extra piece of kit in onto it, do that following thing with it, and there's this whiz-bang thing over there that we want to hook in as well. So it gets, it's great fun.
Progress. And can I ask how big your ROPAs are? Are they like, you find out that you've got the same type of processing activity but different types of patient, different types of care, or are they all very much broken down into, you know, quite detailed?
I mean, it basically goes to the actual information flows, and it's actually what the purpose is for each information flow that we're actually dealing with on the flow map. So it is bloody detailed.
Right.
And the thing is that our privacy notice, my former chief executive said it passed the mother-in-law test.
Which
that she actually gave it to her mother-in-law to read, but it's something her mother-in-law would understand. So it actually goes great depth about all the stuff we're doing. It's stuff that we are constantly having to update. I'm due another update now, in fact. Oops. But it's chunky. It's about 29 pages the last time I had a quick look through it. So it goes on in depth about what everything you wanted to know about Kingston Hospital, what we did with your data, and what we're planning on doing with it.
Right. So quite a challenge to keep up to date as well as compile in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, from 2005 onwards, I started doing the flow mapping back then. First time year was in doing the original information governance toolkit. So a lot of trusts at that point were going, oh, that's too bloody difficult, we can't do that. So, right. You know, I'd actually sort of gone round, I'd hit the major players, and then it was actually slowly mopping everybody else up.
Yeah.
Working Pensions did their losing their two data discs, at which point DOH had a knee-jerk reaction. So suddenly anything where there was more than 50 patient records going anywhere, you had to actually go and you had to get it fast. So we've just been building on that Excel spreadsheet. Obviously, right. We're sort of looking at other technologies to try and tie all this up now.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. And, I mean, obviously, it sounds like you've been in the data protection game for some time. So I'm just interested to know whether you'll probably remember the old style, you know, the proper old style registration, whether that was...
I was involved in one of the first registrations. I was working at a small computer company in Dundee. Boss came in, landed this nice big pack on my desk. Proper A4 size booklet, and you sort of read through, there was a cover letter with it. What we ended up having to do is actually go around, ask everybody in my office, anything where you have got person identifiable data, tell me what it is and what you're doing with it and why. And it was then a case, it wasn't a form or anything to fill in. You had to actually go through and write it all out longhand about what we were doing. And from that, those original registrations, that's why the forms and stuff evolved.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Did you, when you got to the NHS, did you find those old style registrations? Just wondering whether they helped inform the new ropers or whether they were just like, by that stage, you actually dumbed the whole process down.
Well,
and it was like, give us your name and do you do CCTV and something else, wasn't it, by the end of the registration process?
Well, after the sort of computer company in Dundee, I then moved on to university sector. And by that stage, it had already actually gone down to the form. So first thing I did at the universities was actually sort of go through, look at our registrations and actually update them for all the processes I soon found out were actually in place.
Right.
And same when I got here is a case of, hey, let's put the charity section onto this. Let's put chaplaincy onto it as well. Let's actually sort of go through and actually put the information in.
Right. So busy. Anyway, I think you've got a lot on your plate then to try and get all that merged together. I mean, there's a lot, the chat's gone bonkers and there's lots of different threads to take up. And one of them is about the technology, you know, they use to collect and capture the ropers. And I guess this might be something, again, Janice, that relevant for you. So when I first, I remember doing the first roper for GDPR, a client, and I kind of took the old notification model and wrote these records process activities up on Word. It was a fairly simple arrangement, although an international company, but they didn't do much customer processing. It was mostly employee data. And then we decided that actually they might be more difficult to maintain. And then we found an Excel template and built an Excel template and migrated onto the Excel template. But I mean, you know, databases have to be the best way. So Jason's on. Jason would this will resonate with Jason. So you could potentially have an Excel back end, you know, database and a Word front end and some sort of mail merge. So it looks nice and neat and tidy, but actually is in a database format behind the scenes. But I mean, really, what I think the best way to store them is a proper custom built database. And people have been put on here systems that they use. So, you know, we're aware when we've worked on OneTrust, we're aware of DP Organizer, we've got our own system and the other people have raised other ones in here as well. So there's one we raised on SharePoint, you know, ours is built on Salesforce. Yeah, BP Solutions. Is it Ellis or Sam? I'm sorry, it's probably Ellis, is it? Ellis Sam or Sam Ellis? Sam Ellis.
No, it's Sam.
apologies.
That's
fine. you're using a system, a database system. Have you used anything other than that?
We started with a spreadsheet, and then when we were looking at something a bit more structured, we looked at a whole host of things, including your own. But right. We're only a very small organisation, so it was a bit to be polite. It was a bit much for us at that time.
Right. We've changed since then, but I get the feedback.
We've had this since 2017, 18, and we have, as an organisation, we've moved on. So it is something that we're looking into maybe updating, but because it's so simple to use and because it's SharePoint, people think it's part of the Office application.
And that's what you want. That's what you want. You want to be able to introduce this stuff kind of like fairly stealthily so that it's not seen as an additional app you've got to have an additional login for. Oh, exactly. it sounds good. And again, as long as you can keep the information in there and maybe distribute out the maintenance of it and maybe render it as a PDF if you wanted to have a look at it in that kind of format, then
all
that's
those
great.
Things.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, again, if in database structure, I mean, you know, you've got a record posting activity and you might have multiple categories of recipients. So you might have multiple other aspects to it. So that necessitates having more than one value in a cell on an Excel sheet, and in a database that would be multiple records related to. So it's not easy to design and build a database to do it. It is easy, but it's not easy to build a simple database to do it.
And not for other people to understand.
Correct.
The designer understands it. Yes.
The designer understands it, but nobody else does. Very good. Anyway, sorry, I'm just looking back through the chat. There's all sorts of things in here. So thank you for that link. There's a link in there for BPA Solutions that Sam's very kindly put in there. Everyone in favour of the DPDI removing? PDI removing. I've not seen the chat in there. There's lots of chat here. Tracy, Vicky, you've got any, I'm reading the chat. Anything you want to carry on the conversation with? Or
yeah, I think the question you were referring to is about the Data Protection Reform Bill. Removing the need for a ROPA, well, unless it's high risk processing, and somebody said that needs to be highlighted.
Right, yeah. So it's not removed the need for ROPAs, has it? It's really just
a high risk. Yeah, watered it down.
I'm going to have to read it again. That's not how I read it.
When they say that you only need to have a ROPA for high risk processing, not for all your processing.
Yeah, so they've changed those conditions as when you need a ROPA to be just high risk processing now.
I'm just reading it now. Right, I must be on an old version of it. I'll have to have a look at that. Cause that's Section 15, isn't it, of the bill? What I read this morning, but it might be an old version of the bill, because I did go on the government website to download it, is that ROPAs still stand, but the team have just watered down the small business exemption. So they've taken out that occasional processing requirement. But I will go onto it now and have a look, or I will do straight after this anyway, because that would need to be clear. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, the data reform bill, what impact will it have on the keeping of ROPAs?
Well, if it is, as we understand it, it would mean a lot of organisations wouldn't need a ROPA. But I can't get my head around that. And as we talked about this a few weeks ago when me and Tracy were on the other podcast, the ROPA, as we've already discussed, is the central cog of what you're doing. And how are you going to do all of those other bits, like privacy notices and the international transfers, if you haven't got a full understanding of what you're doing, what your organisation is doing? And also, if it is that you only need to have a ROPA if you're doing high-risk processing, how do you determine if you're doing high-risk processing without figuring out what you're doing and then working out whether it's high-risk or not?
Good points. Tracy, any thoughts? I'm frantically trying to find a up-to-date copy of it here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with what Vicky said. And also thinking, you know, as a consultant going in, if you haven't got a ROPA, how are you going to understand what your organisation's doing? You know, they're so useful for us.
Yeah. They're so useful all around for the organisation. Once they have got their head around it and understand why you need it and what one is, and pitch it at the right level so it's not too in-depth that it just scares them. Once you've got that right, they are so useful, and people are really receptive to us going in and creating them for them. Because it really does just give an overview of everything that you're doing in an organisation. And as I said, like, that makes everything else so much easier if you can just understand what you're doing.
Definitely right. I have just downloaded another copy of it, and the duty to keep records is section 15. And I'm sure. Where do you get it? It's just high risk. Am I misreading this or something? Let me have a look. Sorry about this, everybody. Should have been better organised.
There we go. Somebody's just pasted it into the chat, quoted.
Right.
Okay.
Source 15 of the updated bill. Yeah, I think I'm looking at the as-published bill rather than any kind of revisions to it.
Right.
Cannot find the revisions to it. So, yes, right. Well, I agree with you, Vicky. How are you going to control, you know, your processing activity? Are you going to monitor them? Are you going to keep track of them? without some kind of record. You know, will the registration process get beefed up again to cater for that? Don't know. It's a really useful document, I think, the ROPA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's vital. You know, when we're creating action plans for clients, it's all, you know, dependent on the ROPA and just seeing, understanding what's going on.
Yeah. I've got another kind of interesting one. If ROPA has got some kind of notion of retention, you know, do you need a separate retention schedule? Do you think you could make do with a ROPA that is the retention schedule, kind of doubling it up?
Yeah, well, the retention schedule is really useful if you list the reason for the retention period, if it's another, like, legal obligation to keep it for 7 years or whatever. If you can list that there, it's really useful to have. So it's nice to have a retention schedule as well, so you get extra detail. Yeah.
I find it useful having a retention schedule because, as you say, you can have extra detail, so you can define whose responsibility it is to delete them, that bit of data. But also, if what we're talking about is that ROPAs are going to be relatively high level, it won't go into detail about the individual bits of data that are involved in those processing. And then, so each, although the processing activity itself might have a retention period, you might have things in there that should be kept for a little bit less, and so your retention schedule can go into a bit more granular detail as to when things should be deleted.
I think David, again, I confess I've not read that copy, but David's saying, you know, what is high risk processing? Because of course we're used to the phrase, you know, a risk of the rights and freedoms of individuals, but, you know, high risk, is that what it means, or is it mean something else? Is it broader than that? You know, is it meant to be broader than that? I guess the devil will be in the detail. But the way they've put the data protection reform bill together is, well, that's the way they do it, isn't it, with kind of amendments to existing legislation. So trying to piece it all together is not a particularly easy task. So what are the things that again, is it kind of in the ICO's ROPA template, on the columns at the end of the ROPA, which is if you're relying on Data Protection Act 18, Schedule 1, Section 1, so Schedule 1, sorry, where you need to keep, relying on a public interest condition for processing special category data, for instance. So again, in Section 41 of the DPA, it says you've got to have additional columns in a ROPA, so that's what kind of they're there for in the ICO template. So which conditions relied upon, how the person satisfies Article 6, and this is an odd one, whether the person later is detained and raised in accordance with the policies, and if not, why not? That seems a bit of a strange one to have to put in, you know, if not, why not, and are you complying with the policies? It just, again, it seems a bit odd to me, a bit disjointed. There must be a reason for it. Any thoughts?
Not on that specific one, but in terms of the template as a whole, there are a lot of columns added on the end, and I think some of them can be useful, and some of them, like that one, are a bit like, not sure. But my comments would be the way that the ICO have set it out, that spreadsheet would be really useful in an organisation where they've got everything mapped out, they're relatively far along their privacy programme journey, and they've got all that information. When you're starting out from scratch with a new organisation who have no idea what they're doing, that template is very much overkill for them. Like, they just want to do what they need to do for Article 30, get everything down, and then we can build on those extra columns. We can add them in. So as we go through and do a DPIA project, we'll add a column in about DPIAs, and so on and so forth. But that template can be quite daunting when you first look at it, and you don't understand that actually only the first half of it needs to be filled in.
And again, it has links to DPAs and links to process agreements, and again, that just to me adds a lot of confusion to it.
Yeah.
Mrs. Lane's raising an interesting point. I was going to kind of flag this up and ask whether we think that ROPAs are actually useful for locating data when responding to SARS. You know, are they? I mean, I don't know. You know, but my view is they should be pretty high level, and therefore I'm not sure how much use they would be. But what have you found in the past? Anybody? Useful for pinpointing data.
I refer to the Roper. The way I used to do SARS in my old DPO job was I had a list of all the systems that we had, and we'd search every possible system and get all the data out that way. I didn't find it particularly useful to cross-reference that back with the Roper.
Do you think it would have been?
But again, at quite high level. So how do you know that you've got everything of that processing activity?
Yeah, you know the categories of data subjects. You don't necessarily know the items of data. Andrew's coming in again. Andrew, yes, hello.
Just a thought, again, for those organisations that process masses, don't forget Recital 63 allows you to require your data subject to give you a pretty good steer what they're looking at. So if you've got 200 businesses under the one roof, as we have, we don't want chapter and verse, but if they say children's social care records, that's where we'll look. We won't look under the other 198.
Yes, yeah, so then what's the process? You then look at the road and you say children's records are going to be located in these. Have you got systems on there? Have you got...
Well, in terms of a SAR applicant,
yeah.
In addition to them satisfying us that they are who they claim to be, we want to know where they want us to look. And Recital 63 allows you and removes any obligation to respond to the SAR unless you're given a sufficient clue as to what is being included in the request.
Yes, I get that, but just wondering how the Roper helps you to locate or to narrow
it
down.
I don't think a Roper will help you.
Right, okay. But presumably you have an information asset register as well, do you, at the authority?
We do. I mean, most SARs are fairly clear and obvious, but 63 comes in handy when people say, I want everything that the council hold on me. Well, everything isn't detailed enough. Give us a clue and we'll look there.
Right. And have you been challenged on that approach?
Never.
Right. Okay.
It's very effective because people, you know, occasionally you'll get somebody that will drag their heels and say, well, I'm not. You should know what you've got. I said, yes, we do know what we've got. We've got 200 businesses. The law says you've got to tell us where we're looking. I'm not saying down to the nth degree, but just give us a directorate, give us a clue. You know, if you're looking at housing, say housing. If you're looking at education, say education. But don't say all, because we can't comply with all and we won't.
Yeah. And this is the kind of where we are, isn't it, as practitioners, that approach that you're taking is fine until it gets challenged. But somebody else might take a just for one second.
Can you please
stop calling? So somebody else might take a kind of a more risk-averse approach and say, actually, we're not going to adopt that attack at all. We're just going to kind of go with it. But
Only as good as the next challenge, Phil. I mean, if they come and challenge, you go and review your decision and say, is the challenge fair? In which case, we might change our mind. Or if the challenge doesn't come up to the mark, you say, no, we will robustly defend the position.
Yeah.
You haven't unlimited resources, so you have to cut your cloth.
Yeah, and one person's challenge might have more merits than another person's challenge as well. So, yeah. Interesting, yes. Good stuff. Well, thank you for that. So just having a look back through the chat again, see what else we've got on. Tracy, anything you want to throw in or anybody else on the session?
There's a few comments here in the chat. So Natalie says they've got a lot of different systems that contain data. So she thinks that the Roper is really helpful to make sure they do get everything they'd need for a SAR, for example. Anything that supports my view that SARs, Ropers are useful. It's a good thing.
Yeah, Jackie's saying that customers think that you just push a button and out pops all the information. I think the ICO thinks that's what we should have. But of course, the reality is that we use different systems for different things, don't we? So we're way off that. So how about keeping Ropers up to date then? I mean, do we have a centralised model in the main where it's the information governance team's responsibility, or do we distribute that responsibility out to process owners or information asset owners? Is there a hybrid model? What's the general approach to how people do it?
Wouldn't it depend on the size of the organisation in many cases?
Well, it that might be one factor, yes. Yeah. I've seen if there's nothing lighting up on the chat, I thought the chat might start. Okay. What did you do at the school, Vicky? Was it your job or did you push it out down to other people?
Well, it was my job, but that's not how I wanted it to be. And it wasn't too wanted to try. So in my opinion, I think especially for bigger organisations, it makes sense to have process owners within each department that could also act as data champions within that department. I think it's a really good idea to get other people involved in the ROPA to know what one is and get a bit more knowledge about data protection, but also to become more knowledgeable about what they're doing in their own departments. I think that's only a good thing. Mm-hmm. Centralizing it all with one person kind of places, and this is what happened with me a little bit, it places all of the responsibility onto that one person's shoulder, and then you know that it's a lot to bear when you've got a big organization and you're solely responsible for the ROPA. How do you know that you've got everything that finance are doing, or you know, everything that marketing are doing? How can you be sure?
Mm. Was it fairly static, the processing activities, or was it something that was pretty dynamic and fluid? You know, was there more processing activities coming on stream, or more, you know, changes to the ROPAs, you know, more transfers or more?
Yeah, generally the processing activities stayed quite static, but the way that those were carried out changed quite a lot. So you've got data processors. Like at any one time, I'd have at least three, maybe four data processors that I was going through due diligence and contracts with. So they were changing all the time. So that had to be updated. And then a knock-on effect of that, your international transfers and what's going on there. So the way in which they were doing things were constantly evolving. They were adding in new processing activities now and again, but not hugely. It was more just changes to what they were already doing.
Yeah, it needs to be front of mind of us. And it seems from the chat that it can tend to be an annual exercise.
Again, yeah, it's not a bad thing to do it annually. You know, if you're only doing it annually and that's better than not at all, then absolutely great. But yeah, in my mind, it is a continuous thing. So every time you change something, you update the ROPA, or you know, every 3 or 6 months, you just go and have a quick read through it. But annually is better than nothing.
Yeah, it's a major change of culture, isn't it, to get operational people, managers, to think, you know, I'm going to do something different, and therefore I need to update the ROPA or inform. Yeah. You know, the governance team to update the ROPA. It's a big change.
It sounds like the DPOs on the chats like have the oversight, so they're meeting with the DP champions, or they're sending out the annual emails to get the process owners to do the updates.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important they have the oversight, because I do think it's really important the DPO knows exactly what's going on for obvious reasons. If you did farm the job out, updating the ROPA to the department heads or the data champions or whoever it might be, you might miss some of the key bits.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's good if you can keep it going continuously, as Cynthia's saying, that you have a continual process, which is, you know, great. But the whole thing, I think, is a bit iterative, isn't it? You know, you look at the ROPAs, you find variations, you update the ROPAs, you know, you look at the ROPAs again, you find variations, you update the ROPAs. It's always going to lag. You know, I can't imagine that anybody, well, hopefully somebody has, but I can't imagine anybody on the front foot and is lagging stuff on the ROPAs. You know, this is a potential processing activity. And then it either comes off the rope because it doesn't happen, or it gets kind of activated. About my wishful thinking, my rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure that happens. I've not come across anyone that does.
No. I think Laura's, again, kind of picking on this. She's fairly new into the organisation on the chat here. The notion of a data protection steering group or data protection champions, I think, is really important, because it gets the data protection team engaged with the operators in the business, and he gets the operators in the business thinking at least for an hour a month or a quarter or whatever in a different way, you know, about the impact and some of the potential ramifications of what they are doing or want to do. So you know, it's a great idea to set up a steering group and, you know, get that working, because if you haven't got ROPAs and you want to start off, you know, compiling ROPAs, then the only way is to do a data audit, and the best people to do the data audit are those people who are actually doing the processing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just thinking what Sam said, the regs changed, watered down, it'll be hard to get owners to update. Yeah, I'm still a little bit distracted with that, mulling it over what the changes might be. You can kind of imagine it all. In a way, you know, the political argument being, well, if people don't keep them up to date only on an annual basis and they're not accurate, what's the point of them? So let's just scrap them, type of thing. But I personally think they're a very useful tool. Vicky was, Mrs. Lane's asking about your background, Vicky, in education, if you were just the DPO or you had a bunch of other things to do. I think you had loads to do, didn't you?
Yeah. So no, I was originally the data manager at the school and then was asked to do data protection when the previous person left. So they took that on as an additional responsibility. In reality, I probably spent about 50% of my time doing data protection and 50% as data manager, but that wasn't really the aim of it. It was just that I prioritised data protection and pushed it for that much. I don't think the school really wanted me to be doing that much time on data protection. But so I had other responsibilities. I, you know, managed the parent portal and school database and did all sorts of other things, which is the case. I think that's pretty common for the DPO, especially in education, to have other responsibilities.
But it's a big school, wasn't it? Was it 2,500 pupils and four or 500 staff?
Yeah, about 2,100 pupils and, about 400 or 500 staff. So it was a big one.
Yeah, in a way that that school of that size probably got the capacity to have a dedicated role.
Yeah, and there's certainly enough work to have one person doing it all.
I was going to say,
there's a question pops up here. Is anyone getting demands to use RAPERS to include sustainability information? Something that I'm really interested in. So I know, for example, the NHS now ask suppliers to make sure that they are working towards being sort of carbon neutral or more sustainable. I'd like to see it going this way. I'd like to see RAPERS going this way to include that environmental information or some other kind of document that you needed to have it in. But I've lost the question now.
So what's the context of that then? Which of the processing activities are more energy intensive? I mean, I'm not really sure how you would add that.
Yeah, so the quote here is data farms are factories of the 21st century. You can't just see the chimneys. I don't know if Steph wants to jump in with any comments, or it might be Elliot, Steph, or Steph Elliot.
It's Steph.
Is it okay?
Yeah. Picking up David's point, the examples of high-risk processing is the ICO's published is in relation to DPIAs, isn't it? But again, I think that these are common tools that we can use across different sort of topical areas of GDPR. Steph, your camera's on, your mic is live.
Yeah, sorry about that. It took me 2 minutes to work out which buttons to press. The question really is to do with sustainability. I've got clients of mine are looking at their CSR responsibilities. And one of the things that I've been looking at is their ROPAs and using those as an evaluation of you had that data 2 years ago. Are you actually using it effectively and how much data are you storing? I just think it's a good opening gambit rather than you're doing this for compliance purposes. You're doing this for sustainability to make sure you're not wasting energy and you can justify your data storage costs.
That's a really good point, Ash, isn't it? And, in some respects, any ammunition that we can get as privacy practitioners is good ammunition. You know, that might be a way of persuading. You know, this is a very important topic and probably seems to be more important than data protection in many organisations.
Yeah, it's partly because I work in the marketing sphere. So if you look at things like the IAB TCF, what happens there is that data is sent out to thousands of companies. And we're saying, well, actually, if you don't send it to as many companies, you're obviously saving energy and saving storage.
Yeah. Has anybody else had that? There's a few thumbs up on your thing. So maybe other people have been asked to consider sustainability of each kind of data pot or data system. Maybe it's something that's going to become more prevalent. I can imagine you tearing your hair out, Jason, on these herding cats, you know, trying to organise or keep track of what your colleagues are doing in other parts of the business. Just having a look back through the chat, anything else we need to raise? Andrew, you said to us to get our finger out and get on with the session. Is there anything that you particularly wanted to kind of raise in the forum? And anything you wanted to particularly chat about or things? We've rambled on a lot. I don't know if we've actually covered any useful information, but anything you wanted to talk through?
No, Phil, I didn't want to direct or whatever. It was just that I got most of our team online today.
Oh, right. Right.
They were interested because we got this big piece of work coming up.
Right.
But I was just typing you a note actually for the end because I'm off at the end of next week for good, and the team will have to soldier on without me. So
for good, what you're hanging
retiring?
Your,
like,
no, are
yes,
you really?
Yes. Just yeah, following Miles out the door. But I just want to say thanks for these. These are really, really good Friday lunchtime chats. Always something to learn. Always something to pick up from one of the callers or one of the chats. And so it's been really interesting and really good fun.
Good. Well, if you fancy, as I've said before, if you fancy coming on when you're from your retirement, you know, with your slippers on and feet up on the desk and more time to consider life and everything else, then by all means, you know, please keep in touch. You'll be more than welcome to continue to listen and to contribute, of course.
I will drop in like Miles does.
Right, very good. Now, a lady has put in a flowchart, which I'm struggling to see. Actually, I'm going to click on it here. So what is it saying? So I don't have a new project activity on Europa site, complete update. Yeah, I mean, it's great to have a process flow like this. I think the challenge, well, I've things sometimes the challenge is getting your colleagues to follow it. I don't know whether you know it's easier in some environments than others. Not sure. Just again reading through the chat. I think that some of the challenges, you know, people have keeping them up to date is, you know, if it's an annual process, you know, in a fast moving organization, you know, maybe the ROPA deviates from reality, you know, and then it's hard to get it back on track. Maybe we found it hard to get people to take responsibility, despite delegating kind of responsibilities as an asset owner. You know, in some organizations they're highly disciplined and that happens, and in others, then they're not, don't seem to be too bothered about it. And I think the process flow you put together, Omalad, is great. But having a kind of a process to ensure the ROPA gets kept up to date, again, I think that's a really important tool. But what sort of challenges do we find in keeping them up to date and maintaining the ROPAs?
I think it's probably just reminding people to, you know, when you change something to update it. And I think this is where it's really important to have privacy embedded in the culture of the organisation, so that when they do change something, it automatically occurs to them. Or you could have some sort of, I don't know, change request or change authorisation process to go through, whereas update the ROPA is a part of that, so it would trigger. But for me, it's very well having those flow diagrams and things, but it's, as you say, it's making sure people do it.
Yeah, it's getting it embedded into the organisation. I think one of the other points, I mean, we've actually got quite a lot we could still talk about on ROPAs, but one of the things, again, that I think comes up quite frequently is how detailed the ROPA should be in terms of the security measures. I know it says, you know, if possible or whatever it says, where applicable. But, I mean, how far do people go with that? I mean, is it highly detailed? Is it highly superficial? Or do people take the view that, you know, it's too complicated to write them up into the ROPAs, so as it's optional, sort of, we don't bother. What do people put in there about the security measures? What have you seen in your travels, Tracy?
I'd seen just general comments like, you know, sufficient organisational technical measures are in place, those kind of things. Or sometimes a
wishy-washy.
Link.
Wishy-washy.
Yeah, I know. But or sometimes, I was going to say, sometimes a link as well to like the security page of the supplier, perhaps. But that information would normally be in the DPIA. So you're duplicating it. If there is a DPIA,
What have you seen, Vicky?
So I haven't seen anything that wishy-washy. Generally, I'll see things like encryption or, you know, role-based access controls or, you know, that sort of very high level, but a brief summary. I never quite know how in-depth I should be going, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, because I know Fiona's saying that's covered in the DPIA, which I absolutely agree with, but not all processing is subject to DPIA. And I when I talk to people about this, I kind of use the example that we use Salesforce as a business for lots of different things. We, you know, we've got our HR management on there. We've got our sales opportunity management on there. We've got our governance management on there. We've got all our job management on there. So it's a system that's used for multiple purposes. And it, as a system, has got some fantastic security controls. You know, individual roles, individual users can have their own security profile. But we've come across other systems that are less flexible or have got that flexibility, but people just don't apply it. So again, in my mind, what we should be doing on the Roper is, you know, is this pre-posting activity, you know, what system is it in and what is there that's protecting it, you know, and is it multi-factor authentication or is it, you know, data is encrypted at rest or, you know, how I don't know how detailed to go. And I tend to take a systems-based approach, assuming that a system has got kind of universal standard. So Salesforce has got multi-factor authentication, it's got role-based access control, and it's got whatever else it's got. So I tend to take a systems view. So if this data is being processed in Salesforce, then I would refer kind of on my Roper, say refer to Salesforce security measures. This data is being processed in SharePoint, refer to SharePoint. And I have a separate one pager effectively on each of these systems and what the security measures are. But again, I'm not sure whether that's an efficient way to do it or an inefficient way to do it, but interested to see what other people do, really, so why I flagged it up.
That seems like a logical way of doing it.
Until, of course, you find that, you know, one part of Salesforce has got much tighter controls than another part of Salesforce. Or you've got and again, the worry I've got with an Excel sheet is you've got multiple, you know, that system is used for multiple purposes, but you might have multiple systems being used for the same purpose. They might have an HR system and a recruitment system and a payroll system all used for, you know, if you're taking a very ungranular approach, you know, the management of HR and employment relationships. So again, you've got to try and factor that into the Excel sheet. Anyway, there's a few people now jumping off, so they've obviously got other things to crack on with. Is there any final thoughts? I think we probably need to draw it to close. We've been an hour talking about this, 31 minutes past. Any final closing thoughts? Vicky, Tracy, anybody else on the call?
No, nothing for me.
No.
So. No. If anybody's got any thoughts, chuck them in the chat. So you're off on holiday next week, Tracy, is that right?
I am, yes. Hoping to be feeling better.
You lucky devil.
Yep.
And what sort of a week have you got, Vicky?
A busy one. Doing more catching up.
I'm going to try and finalise all the budgets next week for next year, which starts next week, actually. So I'm kind of behind time on that a bit. But anyway, if there's nothing else, then thank you very much, everyone, for your time and joining us. Thank you for your contributions. There's been a lot on the chat today. Ropers is usually a fairly popular subject matter. I'll reach out to you, Andrew. Send me an email address and happily, you know, continue a dialogue by all means. So without further ado, thank you very much, Vicky. Thank you, Tracy, for your contributions. Thank you, Joe, for organising and running the session. Shane hid his hand up and now gone. Thanks, everybody else. Have a great weekend and hopefully we'll see you next week. I think next week is just a GDPR radio type of chat session, so no particular topic to think about. So in the meantime, have a great weekend and we look forward to seeing you soon, hopefully next Friday, if not before.